class, hello, your final guest lecturer of the semester. Make sure you have a look on Brightspace for your final writing assignment outline, the critical conversation assignment. The outline has been posted on Brightspace. If you have a question about that, send an email to me or come and see me during office hours to go over that. We only have the one final guest lecturer of the semester, not a second one this week. This gives you an opportunity to get a head start on your critical conversation assignment, one that's going to give you an opportunity to go back and listen to one of the, I believe we had 23 guest speakers come and see us throughout the semester, so you have plenty of opportunity to go back and listen. If you've been following along all semester, this is going to be much, much, much easier. And again, it's been awesome having you listen to all these guest lecturers and having our conversations all semester. Our final guest this semester is a man named Hayden Yaremko. Hayden is a fascinating individual that I think is extremely interesting for all of you to sort of study his path and where he got his start and how he become a part of the Argonaut hockey group, which he created. So he currently is finishing law school. He is a specializing in tax litigation himself and created in July of 2022 the Argonaut Hockey Group, formerly a scout for the Dauphin Kings, a junior A team in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. I coached during the National Aboriginal Hockey Championships. Hayden is a fascinating individual and has created this sort of group of players of which he is both the agent for and sometimes the family advisor for, and has a background encompassing AAA, Junior A, collegiate hockey, deeply engaged in sport, and after he concluded his playing career, he dedicated himself to expanding his knowledge, network, and expertise within the hockey community. I'm reading his biography off of his website. Hayden spent 5 years scouting in the MJHL, primarily with the Kings, and additionally since 2019, he's actively been involved with Team Manitoba at the NAHC, so over serving as both a manager and a coach. Hayden is a man that has quite recently ventured into a world that I think some of you may be interested in, that is becoming an agent. But maybe some of you know how that job sort of works, maybe some of you don't. Hayden does a good job explaining what the day-to-day operations are of an agent, certainly at the level that I think you would start out at if you yourself were interested in this field. He also sort of is a good person to look at in terms of what his background is, how he sort of started forging his own connections, and I think that even if you are not interested in the agency side of things, understanding how it works is an important part of the industry itself, especially if you're interested in the operations side of the hockey industry or truly any professional sport. So again, and I've said this too with all the guest speakers, but this applies to Hayden as well. If you've got any questions for Hayden, but if you're interested in joining an agency of your own, if you're interested in Argonaut Hockey Group itself, we actually have a recent graduate named Nick Lacoste who joined the staff of Argonaut Hockey Group as the director of analytics after working on a project with myself and another Brock student at the National Aboriginal Hockey Championships, these ones that just ended in May in Winnipeg. So he's an extremely wonderful person to get to know. His group is expanding. They're acquiring new players literally every week. If you follow them on Instagram, that's Argonaut Hockey Group on Instagram, or head to their website, you can see their list of players that they've sort of gathered, and you can see an agency is starting to grow from scratch, and sort of the hard work that goes into acquiring these types of players and fostering these types of relationships. If this, again, is something that is interesting to you and you'd like to ask Hayden some questions from someone in his position, send me an email and I can put you in touch with Hayden. He's an extremely approachable person. So again, as I've said to you at all points throughout the semester, I'd like for you to listen close to what Hayden is saying. If you've got something that you find interesting, as you're going to have to put it in your own audio responses, note down the time so that I can go back and check that you're specifically referencing for Hayden's guest lectures, Hayden's guest lecture, I should say. And I'll meet back with you after our conversation to wrap up the semester and give you your audio response question for this final week 9. With no further ado, here is our conversation with Hayden Yaremko, founder of Argonaut Hockey Group. We are so fortunate to be joined here in the Schema 4P97 by Hayden Yaremko, founder and advisor of Argonaut Hockey Group. Hayden, thank you so much for joining us.
Taylor, yeah, no, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting with you here today.
Perfect. Hayden, take us back to the beginning. What's your earliest memory of hockey? How did you first get involved?
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I'd say it's, you know, over 20 years now. Probably I took my first strides. Definitely credit my parents and, you know, especially my dad for getting me involved in the game of hockey. You know, they never forced me to play the game. you know, obviously they put me on skates, and it was just something that I ended up loving and still love to this day. So, yeah, just fortunate to still be involved in the game today.
Perfect. Take me through your playing career. What was that journey like? Where did you play? What kind of player were you? Whose game did you model yourself after? And how did your playing career sort of come to a close?
Yeah, I grew up through the Paw Minor Hockey. So I spent a lot of years in the Paw Huskies jersey, and eventually we went to regional teams. So ended up playing regional Bantam AAA. That was kind of our first look at some ultra competitive hockey, where you know you come down from being up in the Paw to you go down to Winnipeg, and you see what's really out there as far as talent level in the province. After that, I was fortunate enough, my parents sent me to Athlemurray College in Notre Dame, which is a private boarding school in outside of Regina, Saskatchewan, in the small town of Wilcox. So I spent a couple years there playing hockey with the Argos and the Hounds. After that, I ended up making my hometown junior A hockey club, the OCM Blizzard, Manitoba Junior Hockey League. So I was super fortunate to come back home in my grade 12 year and play part of that year with the OCM Blizzard. And that was definitely a dream come true for me. You know, it was a team that I grew up watching. You know, they had a ton of success winning, you know, 5 straight MJHL championships when I was just a young kid. But yeah, I was fortunate enough to play 3 years for them. And, you know, those are some of the, you know, my favorite years of my hockey career. After that, I spent 1 year at the University of Jamestown, just a small school in North Dakota. Wanted to get my education started, and unfortunately had a couple too many head injuries. Thought it was best to just step away from playing the game, and ended up coming back to Canada to finish my schooling, and I guess here I am today.
Fantastic. And we'll get to the sort of next stage in your professional journey, but most of my students are from Ontario, and they may or may not be familiar with the Junior A sort of infrastructure in Ontario. We sort of went over earlier in the course about what Junior A is and how it differs, but Junior A and the sort of Manitoba MJHL ecosystem, how would you describe the MJHL to people who maybe have never had any contact with MJHL teams or franchises?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, the MJHL is a great league. You know, it has so much history behind it. There's, you know, it's up to 13 teams now. There's, you know, teams as far as the Paw and OCN Manitoba, and, you know, down south all the way down to Winkler, which is, you know, not too far from the U.S. border. So it's very spread out across the province. But you know, with that being said, there's a lot of teams that are kind of centrally located around Winnipeg, but it's a great league. You know, you find players who are on their way up towards the Western Hockey League, they'll make a pit stop in the MJHL and play a year or two before moving on. And you'll also see guys who are pursuing, you know, playing NCAA, whether that's, you know, Division 1 or Division 3, they'll spend the bulk majority of their career in the MJHL. So I think it's definitely a great league, you know, for the province and for our local players here growing up in Manitoba. I know a lot of kids look forward to, you know, playing in the MJHL, especially if they have a team in their home community.
Yeah. And when I try and describe, you know, the MGA compared to the SJHL, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC, I mean, the parity, the strength of these teams top to bottom, I find there's a lot more competition in the MGA than you'll see. There's some really great programs in Junior A, obviously, in Brooks and Penticton and all these other places. But in the MGA, every night is a struggle. Like, it is a very, 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 very tough league, both physically and in terms of competition. And that's one of the first things that comes to mind when I watch the MGA is, wow, these are really, really, really tough kids. And this league is no joke. It is a really, really, really tough league to be successful in. So that, again, you mentioned OCN's success there. Can you describe any experiences you've had with any individual MJHL teams outside of OCN? Like, are there characteristics that are developed between MJHL franchises?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some top-end programs there. I know you said Penticton and the Brooks Bandits. You know, you guys had Carleton Place Canadians in Ontario not too long ago who did quite well at the, you know, on the national stage. In Manitoba, we've had, you know, the Portage Terriers, who've had a lot of success. I mean, the 3 years I played in the MJHL, they won the league each year. They won an RBC Cup, you know, the former name for the now Centennial Cup. They just finished hosting another edition of it this past week. So, you know, Portage is right up there in my opinion with some of those other franchises who've had great success over the years. And but there's so many great franchises in the Manitoba Junior League. I mean, you look at the Steinbach Pistons; they just won the league this past year. I think, you know, they pump out NCAA commitments every single season. If you look at the track record of their goalies that they've, you know, brought in and developed and moved on to NCAA Division One, it's quite impressive. You look at a team like the Dauphin Kings; they won the league the season before. They went to the Centennial Cup and Estevan ended up losing in the quarter or in the semifinal, national semifinal, to the Pickering Panthers of the OJHL. So that was a hard fought 2-0 loss there. But Dauphin just has so much history within that organization. You know, some great alumni went through there and stuff. So there's definitely some great programs within the MJHL for sure.
Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing your expertise so widely there. Back to you, though. Back to your journey. So your playing career ends. You hang it up. The head injury, a wise choice. You come back to Canada. What made you want to get involved on sort of the other side of the business? What made you interested in perhaps becoming an advisor or an agent?
Yeah, that's like you just said, you know, becoming an advisor, an agent. That's always been my long-term goal. So for me, when I knew I was done playing, I needed a way to stay in to stay involved in the game, essentially. So obviously, you know, I felt that I couldn't just jump into advising at this point. You know, I just turned 20 years old. I feel like I had so much more to learn, and I'm sitting here today. I still have a ton to learn. But I felt like I needed to just keep my resume going, you know, keep building connections in the world of hockey, and just keep involved, you know, keep being in the rinks, watching games, meeting coaches and agents and advisors and players and parents. So yeah, I decided to get into scouting. I actually got into my first year of scouting while I was playing my last year of competitive hockey when I was down in Jamestown. So I was scouting for my former coach and, you know, my former junior team up in OCN. So I scouted for them. I watched some Minnesota high school, some North Dakota high school hockey. And, you know, also went to a few events in Southern Manitoba, like the U16 Program of Excellence, and a couple different events like that. That year, the MJHL also hosted a U.S. Prospects Camp that was held at the Ralph Engelstad Arena in Grand Forks. So that was a cool experience as well. But yeah, after that year, I kind of got my foot in the door scouting. My old coach moved over to the Dauphin Kings, and I was fortunate enough to follow him over there as well. So I was still scouting for the same coach and general manager, just for a different organization. Ended up scouting for Dauphin for 4 years. So I guess making my total time scouting for an MJHL team up to 5 seasons. And and then that kind of brought me right up to this year.
And what made you take the plunge and say, not only do I want to be an agent, I want to be an advisor, I want to do it for myself. I want this to be my. Take us through that. Was it an intimidating journey? Was it something that, did you have someone help you along the way?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I guess you could say, it's, you know, a little bit intimidating. And it was all about the timing for me. I felt that the timing had to be right. You know, I used those 5 years of scouting wisely. You know, I felt, you know, just meeting people and building connections and just soaking up as much knowledge as I could from, you know, various people throughout the hockey world. And, it kind of came down to, you know, when I got into law school, you know, well, I mean, just before that, I wrapped up my undergrad degree and, I started looking at my different options on where I wanted to go to law school. And, you know, I really hoped I would get in Winnipeg at the University of Manitoba, just cause, you know, just my knowledge and, my, you know, my connections and just my familiarity really with, you know, Hockey Manitoba and the MJHL and just the grassroots hockey within Manitoba. I thought it'd be best for me and, you know, for getting Argonaut Hockey off the ground to come back home, to my home province and kind of settle in here in Winnipeg.
Fantastic. Now, take us through, what does this job look like? If you want to be an agent, you want to be an advisor, maybe perhaps even helping our students out by telling us what the difference between those two things are, is what does your job actually entail, and how do you look to sort of grow your career from where it is now and to where it is you're hoping to be in 10 years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a little bit interesting getting off the ground. You know, obviously social media is huge nowadays. I thought that was pretty important to you know, start being recognized on social media and just kind of having my brand out there. So, you know, kind of just start building my brand. I was fortunate to have a few clients who kind of, you know, started up with me. I didn't want to start up with, you know, absolutely nothing. I was fortunate to have, you know, three guys basically right off the beginning before I even kind of announced things that, you know, I had previous relationships with, and, you know, I knew them personally and, you know, knew their families and that kind of thing, that, they essentially helped me get, you know, everything off the ground. Because, you know, I feel like in this business, you know, I've come to learn it definitely, your success is, a lot of it comes from referrals, you know, essentially, whether it's, you know, your clients, chatting with their friends, their teammates, and, you know, they're telling them, you know, what a good job you do. And that's kind of how you build up your client base. Or that's how, at least I've found that I've, you know, kind of so far built up my own client base. So, back to your other kind of, you know, sub question there about difference between an agent and an advisor. And that's a good question. And this is, you know, a very common question that comes from, you know, chatting with families who don't really know the answer to that. And, you know, I think especially at this level where you're dealing with players who are, you know, at the junior level and the U18 level, you know, for the most part, a lot of those players are looking to keep their NCAA eligibility open. And part of NCAA amateurism is, you know, they aren't permitted to have an agent. So there's a multitude of rules that are in place for that reason, where they are allowed to have a family advisor. And, you know, one of the stipulations for that is, you know, that advisor needs to be compensated at a reasonable rate. So, like I said, there's a bunch of different rules that we could go into in that, but, that's the, you know, kind of the main, difference between, you know, agent and advisor, whereas, an agent would, more so look at, representing the player, representing your client, and, you know, making decisions and acting on their behalf.
Fantastic. And now, you mentioned that a lot of your business comes from referrals. If you were trying to pursue a new client, or when you meet a new client or a player for the first time, how do you sort of pitch your vision of Argonaut Hockey Group? Why would a player choose your organization?
For sure. I mean, that's a great question, because there's, you know, there's plenty of advisors, agencies, different organizations who work with players out there. So, you know, there's many different options for these players. And at the end of the day, they're going to go with who they're comfortable with and, you know, who they ultimately think is going to help them, you know, help guide them through their hockey journey. So, yeah, it's important to, you know, establish a relationship with, you know, the family and the player. And I found communication is huge. You know, just keeping in touch with these kids, you know, once I do have them on, you know, working with me, just keeping in touch with them. You know, the modern day athlete, modern day hockey player, you know, they want to be communicated with, whether that's from their coach or, you know, from their advisor. So I found that to be a huge thing for me, is just, you know, providing that communication and that transparency, you know, with my clients. But as far as, you know, bringing new clients on, it's definitely an interesting process. You know, to this point, I haven't really had to, you know, kind of go out and, you know, get recruiting and, you know, try bring on a bunch of people, because honestly, at this point, it's just me. I can't, you know, stretch myself too thin. I obviously have my school, you know, law school, which is, no easy task, I guess you could say. And then I have my business and my personal life as well. So just, being able to balance all three of those things is, you know, super important to me. And obviously I don't want to, you know, be too overzealous where, you know, I take on too many clients and, all of a sudden my level of service, you know, my quality of service goes down, and, you know, these players and their families aren't being provided the, you know, the quality of, of service that you know I want to provide to everyone that I work with. So I feel that that's a huge huge balancing point for me, is just, you know, bringing on clients who, you know, their goals align with, you know, my goals. You know, they got to be obviously good players on the ice, but good people off the ice as well. So I definitely do, you know, do a little bit of research into some of the players that I'm going to potentially bring on. And, you know, I meet with them and their family before, you know, we officially start our relationship, and just kind of build, you know, start building the relationship from there. And yeah.
Fantastic. And again, this industry is, and you're still just starting out here, but you've accomplished so much in such a short amount of time. There are many, I think, in this class right now that are interested in this industry. What, given your experience so far, what advice would you give to someone who says, you know, I really want to become an agent, I'd love to become Hayden? What would you tell them in maybe fourth year of university?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I you know, kind of alluded to it a little bit, was just keep building your, you know, your hockey resume, whether that's scouting or coaching or, you know, managing or, you know, director of analytics or, you know, whatever, you know, wherever you want to be involved in the game. You know, as long as you're watching hockey, you know, you're in the rinks, you're meeting people, you're establishing connections. I think that's the biggest part. You know, moving forward in any role in the hockey world, really, is just, you know, doing something within the game and doing it well. And then, you know, kind of from there, you could start branching out, and you know, once you feel comfortable, you kind of branch out, and you never know where you end up.
Fantastic. Last question. You are just a member of the you just finished being a member of the gold medal winning Team Manitoba at the NEHC, a member of the coaching staff there. Take us through your experience at the NEHC, and perhaps maybe a little bit of an explainer as to what the NEHC is and why a hockey fan would be interested in it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, number one reason is it's just a great event. You know, obviously you've had some involvement with it for a number of years now. I played in the tournament in 2015 in Halifax. That was, you know, my first time ever traveling out to the East Coast, and honestly, probably the first time I really traveled, you know, really outside, you know, kind of our province, or, you know, our general area, Central Canada. So that was amazing. I love my time out there, you know, getting to play in the tournament. It's such a high level tournament. And then, you know, kind of move forward. I played my junior and did all that stuff. And I was fortunate to be asked by Kevin Monkman, who's our Team Manitoba general manager, who, you know, we were both scouting for the Dauphin Kings at the time. And we were just sitting around a table, kind of doing some scouting meetings, and he asked if I wanted to come back and be involved as a coach. So Kevin was my coach back in Halifax. So we kind of joined forces there together in 2019. You know, we built a team for Whitehorse. We went up to Whitehorse, Yukon, had another great experience up there. We ended up winning gold. Unfortunately, we lost a couple years due to the pandemic. So we didn't play the tournament in 2020 or 2021. I believe both years we, you know, got to the point where we named our roster, and, you know, we did all the scouting, all the work behind the scenes, and just unfortunately they, you know, they decided not to go forward with the tournament. So that was obviously a little bit disappointing, you know, that not only for myself, but more so for the players who missed out on that opportunity. You know, it's a very small window for these athletes to play in these types of tournaments. You know, often guys are only, you know, making this team as a, you know, 16 or 17 year old. You know, some guys are fortunate, they play up to 4 years. But yeah, and then we move forward into 2022 after, you know, getting out of the pandemic. The tournament was in Membertou, Nova Scotia, again, another beautiful location. They did a great job organizing the tournament there. And then this past year, just last week, you know, we finished up in Winnipeg where Manitoba won gold again. So it's a great event. It's the level of play, you know, surprises so many people. I think personally, you know, especially, you know, there's certain provinces every year that put together a very good hockey team. And, but at the same time, it's nice to see, you know, when a non-powerhouse quote unquote province, you know, puts together a competitive team for a given year. So it's a lot of fun to be involved with. You know, we always, you know, we're fortunate in Manitoba to have a great pool of Indigenous athletes to choose from, and it's just a great event on and off the ice.
Aiden, thank you so much for all your time, and we really value you taking time to share your experiences and your expertise with us.
Thank you, Taylor. No, I really appreciate you having me on here.
So that was Hayden Yaremko. Again, go check them out on Instagram. Go have a look at their website. Go follow Hayden on Twitter if you use Twitter, I should say. You can also follow Argonaut Hockey Group as well. If only, again, just so you can trace the evolution of an agency in its early stages and see all the places that Hayden's going to be heading. I mean, it's interesting to see the ages that Hayden has on his roster in terms of players. Some of them are heading to CHL camps right now. You're going to see an agency start to grow and mature as through the years that come. And you see some of what Hayden was mentioning here in terms of the personal relationships that you develop, how one player sort of leads to another. And it's something that is truly painstaking work. And you can talk to agents who are, 40 years into their career, and they say the same thing. It's a business built on personal relationships. And it does require a lot of hard work. And there is no real one pathway. And this is one of the things that I really want to mention here as we finish up not just this topic, but many others, is this notion that there's sort of some magical blueprint to any one specific job in hockey. And this applies to many different sports. And I hope that, given the very, very varied group of speakers that have come in throughout the semester, that you get a sense that there really is no one way to access this industry. And it is really about developing a wide set of skills. And that is something that I think really does benefit you in a sport management program. There isn't just one thing you learn in a sport management program. We kind of force you to do some things that maybe you're not comfortable with, to do some things maybe you're not good at. That's kind of the point, right? That is the idea. So not all university programs are like that. I mean, some university programs will take students who excel in one area and just sharpen their expertise in that one specific area. They hit the job market. If they're not specifically employed in that one area, they're not necessarily terribly comfortable. But in sport management students, if they've done all that they can throughout this program, they have a lot of value to a sports organization because they have the ability to serve a wide variety of functions. So again, if you have a goal in mind, a specific job in mind, and your specific path right now doesn't look like someone who currently holds that job, just know that there really isn't an established blueprint. For instance, say you want to be an agent, and you think to yourself, well, maybe I have to go to law school to do that. I mean, Hayden has chosen that path, and many agents are lawyers, but not all of them are. And many agents are ex-professional hockey players, not all of them are. There is a specific commonality between many people that hold these positions, and that is hard work and a willingness to step out of comfort zones. And that is, again, something that hopefully we have instilled upon you here at Brock, and something that hopefully in this course you've heard from a wide variety of people in the industry that can sort of corroborate that type of thinking. But that's sort of on a broad level, I think, something we need to think about more broadly as we move students out of our program and you into your fourth year here and final year here at Brock. I do want to say a couple things about the Critical Analysis Project before we get to our audio response question. Again, just a reminder, as I said in the outline here regarding AI, just know that we are cognizant of these tools. I'm not terribly sure how AI would be enormously helpful to you in this project, because I am looking for an argument. Now, I am aware of the fact that these AI tools can construct arguments for you. But what they cannot do, and do not get caught doing this, is generate sources for you. Again, they can't do that. There's a strange sort of anomaly here. But again, that's one of the ways that you can definitely get yourself easily identified, though it is really not that difficult to spot it by reading. But certainly we also have tools that can sniff it out as well. It's just a word of caution to you. It's really not worth the trouble right now. Now, if you want to help, use it as a tool to help you generate ideas, and then you use those ideas and put them into your own sort of writing, that's fine. But wholesale copying from AI does constitute a violation of the academic conduct policy, and this is not the time in your academic career that you really want to run into those types of problems. You don't want to start your whole fourth year with all of this sort of waiting for you in the fall. Just know that I am aware of these tools. I use them in my own life as well. I'm very curious about this piece of technology, and I am cognizant of trying to design assignments that are difficult, at least in some sense, to use these AI tools for. But that's just, again, another word of caution to you. Don't get caught in this sort of new frontier. Another thing to consider here is the importance of making an argument. To those of you who've spoken to me in office hours, I've gone over this with you, but keep in mind, right, I do not want a book report. I don't want a broad summary of a bunch of things that are important about a topic, right? So for instance, if your topic is, say, women's hockey, What I don't want is a long description of all the things that are going on in women's hockey and all the things that are preventing a professional league from being created. What I want is an argument about some aspect of women's hockey, right? Make an argument and use the sources to reinforce your argument. If I've been asked a couple times about the use of first person, again, I would highly discourage it. Not because it's, you know, not permitted or it's something that's disallowed. It really doesn't serve you very well. And I've said this to you in many courses. If you've taken courses with me before, it just is not a terribly persuasive way to make an argument. If you say something like, I argue that, I believe, I think, just anytime you see yourself doing that, flag it, cut it out of the sentence. If the sentence doesn't make sense, then it's not a terribly well-written argument, right? I know it's you. You don't need to keep reminding me who it is. I mean, your name's on the top of the essay. I've said this to you before. If you're in my second or third year classes, there's no real need to use the first person in that way. And it's not really a style thing. It has more to do with the clarity of your ideas. If you're able to sort of remove your first person, this sort of guttural reaction, your beliefs about a certain topic, especially if you find yourself talking about something you're passionate about, which many of you are when it comes to hockey, sometimes it can cloud your analysis. It can cloud your judgment. So again, refrain from using it. That would be my advice to you on that front. In terms of the critical analysis project, I think it's very important that you look over the writing early on in these earliest stages, and you're able to summarize what it is that you're arguing in one sentence, right? If you're talking to your parents or your friends, you should be able to summarize what you're writing about in one sentence. If you can't, you're likely not making an argument, right? So say, for instance, you're writing about violence in hockey, right? If you can't articulate what it is that you're writing about and making an argument about in a very short way, then you're probably not really making an argument in and of itself. So for instance, an argument about violence in hockey would be the NHL must eliminate fighting in hockey. That would be an argument, right? And one of the ways you can check if you're making an argument or if you're simply summarizing is, can someone disagree with this? That's a great test. Can someone say the other side of this? If they can, that's a good thing, right? We want that. So we want to be able to say that this is not the only possible pathway forward. If there's no possible way to take the other side of your argument, it's not really an argument, it's probably a summary. Okay, so keep that in mind when you're making your argument, and then you use the secondary sources and the examples to buttress that argument that you've made. Finally, I wanted to say something about the audio responses themselves. It's no fun recording yourself. I understand that. It's no fun listening to your voice back. It's no fun. It's kind of hard to have to take the time and really think about these things deeply. But I just want to say the vast overwhelming majority of you have really been doing a great job. And I was a little apprehensive about instituting it in this course. I wasn't sure if I'd get the buy-in that I really wanted at a fourth year level. And I think that so many of you have really taken some time. Some more than others, I'll say that for sure. I mean, that's just the way university courses go. That's totally fine. But I'm on the whole, I'm extremely pleased with the amount of work you've put in. And I really appreciate you going back and clearly listening to the guest speakers. And again, if there's anything from an audio response that, or if there's anything from a guest speaker and you remember this from week two and you'd like to reach out to them, and it's months from now into your semester, even after you graduated, that's totally fine. Reach out to me and I can put you in touch with these people. It's been extremely beneficial, I think, already for some of the people that have reached out. And this is not just this semester, but in semesters past. People are eager to help. And frankly, they're eager to help people from this program. They have a proven track record of being hard workers and high achievers in the sports industry. And that, I think, best describes many of you entering your fourth year right now. So again, a word of thanks for all of you for buying in and really giving it your best shot. And I've really enjoyed getting to listen to all of you. And I want to get a little more personal for your final audio response question. It has to do with something that is a mixture of kind of the example set by Hayden in this second half of week nine, and the advice given in week nine, part one, from Kent Wilson, and also a little bit about what Jack Han said earlier on, certainly a little bit about what Byron said, what Sonny said, this notion that it is really on you to generate your own stamp here, and really to put yourself in front of some of your ideas and really take a risk. And I want to ask you for your final audio response question. Drawing on the advice given by Kent and the example set by Hayden, how do you plan to get your name and your ideas to the wider sporting public? If you haven't given this any thought before, now's a great opportunity, right? If you've never had any desire to do this, that's okay, right? Look, if you want to give me a response to say, I just don't think this is for me, I don't think I can do it in any way, and there's really, again, no one answer about how you can do this, but I want you to spend a bit of time here. It's the summer. It's before things get super busy again come fall, though many of you are working jobs, taking multiple summer courses. I know this is a busy time of year. I remember being an undergraduate myself, thinking to myself, actually looking forward to September sometimes because you end up working so much in the summer. But if you can just take a brief moment here and consider it, right? Your goal here is to work in the sports industry. It's why you came to Brock. You maybe most of you maybe even want to work in the hockey industry itself. How are you? And this again, if you don't want to work in hockey, that's fine. But what aspect of sport do you want to work in, and how are you going to get your ideas out to the general public more broadly? Take some time, make a plan for yourself. Mention something specific, maybe that Ken said, maybe something that Hayden mentioned in becoming an agent, or maybe in his own career. But specifically reference something that you think is an interesting idea for yourself, and make a little resolution to yourself right now as a plan to kind of, you know, and make a, and you can also reference someone from weeks past as well. Maybe you think Byron's example was particularly helpful, for instance, or Jack, right? But I want you to be selfish here for a moment and really think about yourself and your time here and your final year of Brock, and how you're going to really try and get yourself noticed in that way, how you're going to try and put your ideas out there. Drawing on these examples from the people we've seen this semester. Again, if you need to think back to Dom's guest lecture, and we talked about Eric Tulski, one of the brightest minds in hockey. He was a PhD in nanotechnology and holder of dozens of patents. He's one of the smartest people in North America. And he was just blogging about goaltending at one point, you know, just because he loved it, right? I mean, I'm not asking you to become Eric Tulski, but I'm asking you is to take some risks in some way. Maybe it's starting a blog, that's great. Maybe it's posting on LinkedIn about this stuff. It's really up to you. What you think is most relevant to your career, and maybe it's a volunteer task or reaching out to a team or something like that. Either way, think about it. Give me sort of your plan here, and that's kind of what I wanted to leave off on. So I wanted to, again, thank you for your participation in this entire course, really. I know it can be really difficult to follow along with online courses. I've got a chance to speak to a few of you in person about this course so far, and I've had some good feedback. Again, that's not what I'm looking for, but it's nice to see you all in person, and I hope I will be able to do that before you all graduate. Some of you are graduating very soon, so I do want to thank you. It's difficult all the time to go through online courses, so... Yeah, be proud of the work you've done, and finish this last assignment up as best you can, and looking forward to seeing you all in person very soon.